Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Veteran reporter Joe Klein of Time magazine hit the road last month for a 19-day journey through the country talking to Americans way beyond the Washington Beltway and the cable TV studios to ask all kinds of people what they really think about the moment, the place this country's at, and what's needed. What he found in our time of high-volume polarization was a yearning for civility. And a lot more. This hour on Point, Joe Klein, fresh off the road on the Voice of America that he found. Joining me now from New York is Joe Klein, political columnist for Time magazine and author of six books, including his most recent, Politics Lost. His report from a 19-day listening tour is Time's cover story this week. Headline, The Return of the Silent Majority. Joe Klein, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Hey, Tom, I like the veteran part of it. That's like a euphemism for ancient reporter.
A little gray in the beard, but it comes, and it's worth noting, and it's good.
Happy to go out there and ask people what they're thinking, though.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear that. So here you are starting way down south, Laredo, Texas, in a charcoal gray Jeep Liberty. No Obama's scale travel bus for you. You're right down by the road there. Give us a sense of the path of your journey, Joe.
Well, you know, this is the second time I've done this. I did it last year because I'd been spending a lot of time overseas in the Middle East and the war zones. And I came back and I saw all these angry people on TV. And I realized I hadn't been spending much time in the Middle West. So I did an old-fashioned journalistic thing, which is to jump in a car and do a road trip. But I did it in a newfangled way, which was to crowdsource it. I put out an all-points bulletin to Time readers last year and said to them, if you have someone really interesting you'd like me to meet, you know, your coworkers, your neighbors, let's get together. And we did it again this year, starting in Laredo, moving up. And, you know, it was a diverse group of readers and CNN watchers this time who responded, ranging from a black woman's book club in Austin, Texas, to the Arkansas Dentists Association, whom I met with in at a country club in Jonesboro, Arkansas.
That's great. That's great. I'm looking at your path here, Laredo, right down on the Rio Grande on the Mexican border, San Antonio, Austin, Texas. We'll talk about that. And then Texarkana, Hope, Arkansas, famously, Arkadelphia. Little Rock, Jonesboro, then up St. Louis, way over to Joplin where the tornado hit, then straight north, Elston, Iowa, Des Moines, Nevada, Iowa, New Hartford, Iowa. You were headed all the way to Minneapolis, but I think your 91-year-old mom needed a little attention. Is she all right, Joe?
Well, she's 91, and, you know, at that point in a person's life, you have to start making some decisions, and that's ongoing, unfortunately.
Well, we wish her the best on that. But here we are. Yeah, we really do. We picture you out across the country again. We've got a little bit of your playlist or the music that was in your ears as you drove across the country there, and we're going to hear some of that. And out of all that, you come up with kind of an arresting headline in the time when the volume is turned up very high all over the place. You come up with the return of the silent majority. That is a phrase that you've almost got to be a boomer to even know or remember. It goes all the way back to Richard Nixon in the 1970s.
That's right. It was his phrase.
Yeah. So is that really back in this time when we've got, you know, high amplitude Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street and all the rest?
Well, you know, Tom, I'm tempted to say that it never really left. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've looked at the polling over the last, you know, decade, two decades, when things have really gotten very noisy in Washington, you see 10-15% on both sides that are, you know, extreme, angry, volatile. And then there's a whole bunch of people in the middle who are searching for politicians who reflect their point of view. The big difference from last year's trip to this year wasn't so much the moderation that was there. But last year, the depth of the economic situation and the kind of sense of being lost was far, far more raw. I mean, people were really anguished rather than angry. Now they've become a little bit more contemplative and started thinking, well, what are we actually going to do about all this? And why isn't Washington responding to us and to our cares and to the fact that most of us are in the middle?
Put that in the context of your road trip, Joe. Put us in a place or two where you began to see, I mean, I'm sure that it wasn't all sweetness and light and hand-holding out there. I've read your piece. I know it wasn't. And yet you come up with this as kind of your bottom line. Take us to some of those arenas where you saw this play out.
Well, you know, we'll go to the Arkansas Dental Association. There were about six dentists sitting around a table at a country club. And what they expressed about the president was something I got all along the way. You know, they kind of like the guy personally. They think he's really smart. They think he's honest. But they're completely disappointed in him as a leader. And they wonder, time and time and time again, you get the same thing. I got this in Elston, Iowa as well. Why do they listen to people like the Tea Party? Why don't they listen to people like us? I mean, you know, Time poll that went along with this, 11% of the people identified themselves as supporters of the Tea Party, but 30% said they were kind of impressed by the Tea Party, that they favored it. And that's because somehow the Tea Party managed to build a megaphone that people in Washington would listen to. There was a banker in Elston, Iowa who said, I'm a Republican, I'm a moderate, I'm mm-hmm. a Mitt Romney Republican. Why isn't anybody ever reflecting what I'm thinking?
Built a megaphone. That got people's respect. The fact that the Tea Party had figured out how to raise its voice in such a way that it had real impact in Washington. What about the Tea Party message or the Tea Party voting impact at this point?
Well, they're very upset about the fact that the Tea Party members in Congress have stood in the way of compromise. One of the dentists, said to me, the Tea Party, I understood the Tea Party last year in the elections because they were saying things that people were talking about. But then they get to Washington and nothing's happened. He said, I feel like saying to those Tea Party congressmen, you are now them, you know, the people that you were complaining about.
You them.
And that was a pretty common sentiment that I got across the board.
You collected some sound as you went. We've got a little bit here. I mean, there was also still kind of the fisticuffs back and forth. You went to a Tea Party meeting in Arkansas. And here's from Joe Klein's road trip. I heard from local Tea Partiers. About their concerns. Here's one.
I have no legal or no moral obligation to take care of somebody that's too sorry to work, that wants to get out here and create babies without accountability, whether it's a woman or a male. I have no compassion for those individuals at all, and I don't owe them anything.
From a Tea Party meeting in Arkansas, Joe Klein also talked with the only Democratic congressman, among many others, in the state of Arkansas, Representative Mike Ross. He said Tea Party's losing momentum in his constituency.
They gained some of the momentum because they were speaking out, and in an indirect sense were speaking for a lot of people that felt like no one was speaking for them anymore. But I think now more and more people are seeing that not as constructive.
Joe Klein, I wonder how these pieces fit together. You say people were kind of impressed by or even proud of the Tea Party for building a megaphone, as you put it. On the other hand, they may not like everything that they see going on, but they still want a megaphone lifted to speak to the powers that be. If they don't want to convey the Tea Party message exactly as it's evolved, is there a message or is it just a million messages, Joe?
Well, you know, they're not too happy with us, Tom. They're not too happy with the media. They think that we only emphasize the sensational. And by the way, you know, the last few weeks with the wall-to-wall emphasis on Occupy Wall Street has kind of proven their point. And we very rarely reflect what is the overpowering reality out there. I mean, 89% of the people in the Time magazine poll said that they'd rather have politicians who compromised on big things like the federal deficit rather than politicians who stuck by their principles. You know, this is still very basically a middle-of-the-road country, and those of us who spend a lot of our time in Washington, tend to forget that.
So there's a silent majority, and it doesn't like this thing that seems to have framed in its polarization, Joe, our political life for such a long time now.
I led the piece with this kind of hilarious scene in St. Louis. One woman Time reader brought her neighborhood together. They were equally divided between Democrats and Republicans. There was one Tea Party supporter, self-described Tea Party supporter in the group, and he wound up dominating, you know, a hour and a half, 2 hour meeting. He had opinions about everything. And, you know, there were some Democrats who were, you know, pushing back against him. But still, it was a metaphor because most of the people in the meeting were quiet. I had to draw out their opinions.
It can happen right there in the neighborhood. We're in Joe Klein's playlist from his trip up the country. Here's Bella Rosa from Eliza Gilkison, great Texas singer. Beautiful in Spanish right here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
De sandía roja, sus brazos morenos subiendo hacia mí en la luz del sol, yo lo recordaré, bella rosa,
yo lo recordaré.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American public opinion beyond the shouting match. Out across the country, Joe Klein's been traveling and talking for Time magazine. We're hearing what he's found. By the time he hit Iowa in his Jeep Liberty there, he was really hearing that stone-cold moderate sound. Here's part of his listening tour. He heard from a small group of from the 43-person town of Elston, Iowa, who got together for one of his road trip town meetings. Listen.
We're not telling people how we feel. We're letting the extremists do the yakking. And we have to start stepping back up again.
I mean, I think that people are so busy fighting, you know, in Congress. And to me, it feels like they're trying to get reelected. And the civility, that really bothers me, the civility with which
lack of respect.
The incivility, I think she means right there. Joe, when people listen closely here, we've got crowdsourcing ourselves. And Ellen has a question for you online already, Joe. She says, I'm interested to hear Joe Klein's to tackle the mismatch then between locally based understandings of our national direction and top-down understandings of the same. If there's a gap, why?
Well, I think that the gap has a lot to do with money and politics and the feelings of the base. Politicians play to their base. I mean, look at what's happened the last 4 years. Barack Obama is elected 2008. The country is incredibly concerned about the economy. What becomes his top priority? Health care. 80% of the American people say that they're happy with health care, and yet he spends the first 18 months of his presidency or 15 months of his presidency on that issue. Then we come fast forward to 2010. And once again, the American people are really upset about the economy and about the trajectory of the nation. They think that we're in decline. And the Republicans storm in on the strength of the Tea Party. And what do they address? Not the economy, but Medicare, which 80% of the American people approve of. So why do political parties continue to address issues that that most people, in an inverse way, that most people are in favor of, and the answer has to be that their base is dominating a lot of this conversation.
Of course, the base is out there too. Where you were driving, Joe. The base doesn't live on, you know, Mars.
Yeah, but the base is a fairly small cohort. I mean, even if you take the number of people who actually contribute to political campaigns, that's a tiny number of people compared to the general population. And most of the people who are out there are pretty reasonable. It doesn't mean that they are right down the middle centrists.
Mm-hmm.
My sense is that on issues like the financial concentration on Wall Street, the fact that, you know, there are five or six big banks who dominate our economy, people might have been open to a more radical solution, you know, to breaking up the big banks if the president had gone in that direction. I'm not saying that it's always the moderate solution that they're in favor of, but they are in favor of, you know, different answers than the ones that you keep on hearing from the politicians.
We've got Sam writing online, dentist at a country club. That's not middle America. Well, it's part of it. But let's pull the curtain back further, Joe. Hear from sort of more of the settings and people that you sat with. I mean, you were in Texas. You sat down with this, sort of had barbecue with a book group of African-American women. Really interesting conversation there about where this country stands in the world now.
Right. These were very smart women, and they were open to new ideas, just as I was saying before. They had been watching the Republican debates, and one woman, a lawyer, said that Rick Santorum's idea of having a zero tax on corporations who do manufacturing might be a good idea. She said that might get us started again. Others in the group were talking about the fact that they were wondering, as people did along the way, why is it that this country seems to be in relative decline? Last year when I went out, people would blame it on China or blame it on the politicians or whomever. This year was a lot more contemplative, and there was one woman in the book group who said, you know, maybe we just got too used to the good times. It's all been, you know, our parents had to deal with ups and downs. We've only had ups, and now that we're having a down period, we don't know how to deal with it at all.
You quote Renita Bankhead at the book club there saying, we're trying to cling to the past. Our way is best. We're superior. That kind of thinking, while some of these other countries are racing past us economically, I'm worried about the level of anti-intellectualism, she said, among some of the social conservatives. And Danita Nelson, also in that book club, just saying, we don't have the same place in the world's pecking order that we used to have, and we're not going to. On the other hand, in Austin, Texas, you found some real sort of bubbling optimism there about what's going on in the future, Joe.
Yeah, well, Tom, this is a big country, and
yes,
there's room for a lot of different perspectives, which is why I tried to, you know, to vary this as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And I spent a day in Austin, Texas with high-tech startup people who were incredibly optimistic about the future, even though maybe one out of every 10 of these high-tech startups actually succeeds. But their feeling was that the internet and the ideas and jobs that are being spun off of the internet was going to save us. I don't know that anybody believes that that's actually the case, but it was really nice to spend a day with people who are optimistic. That was so much at variance with everybody else.
Joe Klein, let's go to the phones. Joe in Cranston, Rhode Island. You're on with Joe Klein. Thanks for calling.
Hi, nice to be on with you guys today.
Sure. What do you think?
I just wanted to make a quick comment. I know we're maybe the silent majority, but we're listening, and we're making our voices heard with our vote. Next election cycle, people on both sides of the aisle, I think, are going to be in for a rude awakening because they're not giving the majority what they want.
Do you see yourself as part of this great middle that Joe Klein describes?
I do. I am a very liberal person, but my mayor here is a Republican, and I voted for him in the past, and I'll continue to vote for him in the future. I'm on both sides of the aisle, and I'm listening, and I'm not afraid to change my opinion if someone gives me facts.
Do you feel like you're going to be given good options to vote for in that kind of middle zone you find yourself in, Joe?
There are options out there, but when my litmus test has to be that someone running for office believes in evolution or doesn't believe in evolution, that's a huge problem.
Yeah. Joe, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Joe Klein, let me get one more right here. Mel in Beaufort, South Carolina. Mel, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me. Hi, Joe. I've been reading Joe's articles as they've come in and listening to your show here.
Great.
I consider myself a part of that silent majority, but at the beginning of your show, you said, are you willing to ready to compromise or ready to fight?
Yeah.
I've been ready to compromise all along, but if they don't soon do something, I'll have to go fight because those guys down there in Washington, you know, they're just not paying attention and not. They were sent there to do a job, and they obviously want to get paid, but they don't want to do their job.
So if it comes to fight, what are you prepared to fight for, Mel? In what direction? What kind of policies?
Well, I think that we've got to have a compromise where, I mean, I don't have all the right answers, you know, and neither does anybody else as far as I'm concerned. They've got to sit down, and everybody's got to be willing to give, because the situation we find ourselves in right now, everybody's going to have to sacrifice something for the better good of everyone, or we're just not going to get anywhere.
Yeah. Mel, I appreciate your call very much. Joe, you report talking to a police officer who said he was a big conservative, but then you asked him if we should have a jobs program or reduce the deficit. He said, jobs right away. You've got this, you say Americans turn out to be refreshingly heterodox, and we're hearing it there already, but where does that energy go? How does it get expressed politically when things are so polarized in Washington, Joe?
Well, I think they're looking for common sense. It's really interesting. There is a continuum starting, you know, on one side with real ideologues and on the other, pragmatists. And I think most of the American population, you don't find straight ahead liberals or straight ahead conservatives. People have a mix of beliefs. You might find a strong, almost socialistic liberal who is anti-abortion. You might find, you know, a conservative like that police officer who hated Obama. He just despised the president, and yet he was in favor of an FDR-style New Deal jobs program. People are far more interesting. The American people are far more interesting than the American politicians, I have to say.
Yeah, and you wonder how that gets expressed in our political system.
I think that part of the appeal of someone like Chris Christie is that people look at him and they say, oh, he's actually saying what's on his mind. When the hurricane's coming, he says, get the hell out of the water, instead of some kind of formal politician-like statement. And I think more of that is indicated.
Matt, in Rochester, Massachusetts. Matt, thanks for calling. You're on with Joe Klein.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
Yeah.
I think one of the symptoms, and it is a symptom because it's been developing for quite a long time. You know, you look back to the Crossfire show all the way up through the congressman shouting, you lie at the president.
Mm-hmm.
The Tea Party has made it very, very acceptable for people to for the loudmouths on the extremes to bully folks into their opinions, into following their opinions. And, you know, when you start seeing those voices become institutionalized as they have in the government, then people start believing that that might actually be the right way to go. And I think that that's one of the most polarizing things that's been going on. And
Matt, we've got it. And I appreciate that call, Joe. What about it? Matt sees Tea Party as having kind of sanctioned a bullying approach to politics.
Well, the Tea Party is only the latest in a series. I once wrote a piece for The New Yorker about 15 years ago called The Town That Ate Itself, which was about Washington and how discourse had become so noxious. You remember back during the Clinton period how shocking it, you know, that kind of screaming, the Crossfire-style screaming seemed to so many of us. And, you know, it's in some ways it really started with Newt Gingrich and when they put TVs in the House chamber, and you'd have Republican after Republican after Republican getting up and saying absolutely extreme and outrageous things in an empty chamber. Well, you know, the Democrats caught up to that, and over time, because of the tremendous competition that we have in our business, people found that screaming got better ratings than reasoned discourse. And I think that we've done the public no great favors. In fact, I think that we in the media have a lot to answer for.
You write in one of your sections there, Joe, it seemed to me that the closer the Tea Party folks got to home, the more legitimate their beefs were. On the most basic local level, concerns about waste and corruption seemed a good thing to you, a revival of citizen concern after a long period of apathy.
Well, you know, I actually named a character in my novel Primary Colors, my anonymous novel, after this phenomenon, Orlando Ozio, the governor of New York. Machiavelli once said that Ozio is the greatest enemy of a republic. What's Ozio? It's indolence in Italian. And Machiavelli was really concerned with how do you keep a republic coherent when it's not at war, when it's not under duress. And from the end of World War II until very recently, we had the greatest experiment in Ozio in the history of the world. And during that time, because, you know, basic things, life and death matters, weren't at stake, we kind of lost the habits of citizenship. And so in that way, the fact that Tea Party people are getting activated, and also the Occupy Wall Street people as well, and especially in their communities, beginning to look at local corruption and trying to make things more efficient, I think is a good thing.
Of course, you also talk here about it can overshoot or be overtaken. Ed in Bristol, Vermont. Ed, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Well, what do you think?
I was curious about the Times poll that said 89% of those polled wanted compromise, wanted politicians who were compromisers. And, you know, after watching Obama go through the budget hearings and trying to get the Senate to approve a budget, you know, I felt that most people felt he was compromising, like the big compromiser, and his supporters were very upset that he was compromising so much and sort of, you know, giving up on his own principles just to get something passed.
Right.
Yet, so if 89% of those polled were interested in compromise or politicians who compromised, how come 89% aren't supporting Obama?
Yeah, that is a great question. Middle of the road is your headline, Joe, but you hear it.
You know, that's an excellent question. And I know that the president feels this way from some of my other reporting. He's kind of mystified by the fact that when you look at the polls, 60 to 70% of the people support his positions on everything from the Jobs Act that is being roundly ignored by the Congress right now to the deficit deal that he was trying to make with John Boehner, the $3 trillion deal.
So what's the disconnect, Joe?
Well, the disconnect is that John Boehner and the Republicans have been listening to their base, to the Tea Party people. I think that it's really, you know, the interesting thing here is that there is a majority in the House of Representatives and also in the Senate for these kind of compromises, but those majorities aren't being heard for two separate reasons. In the House, it's because Boehner wants to have a majority of his caucus in support of any given measure, and there are an awful lot of Tea Partiers who are opposed to that. And in the Senate, you have the filibuster problem where you need to have 60 votes rather than a simple majority.
We'll come back and look at that with Joe Klein. He's been out on the road for Time Magazine, says there's a big middle of the road out here that's not being heard. Here's from Joe's playlist on the road. Jeff Tweedy and Golden Smog here with Radio King. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Let's go back in time, 1959, I'll take you, Radio King. Your music fills my car, and your voice breaks every time. I'm still wondering if I know who you are. I hang on every line.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American public opinion beyond the shouting match out across the country. Joe, lots of response here online. Let me give you just a few of these. Here's one from Casey. She writes, speaking to your theme, she says, sure, people will talk a lot about wanting civility or compromise, but bring up the right issue that all goes out the window. Mention gay marriage, immigration, corporate personhood, top marginal tax rates, abortion. You know, left and right civility and compromise turn to anger and division. And Kenny writes on Facebook, Joe, says, the very notion of extremism in politics has become more encompassing of what most of us would view as reasonable beliefs. So it's hard to know what it means to be moderate. Centrism looks more like a ploy used to ignore the wants and needs of the people. And one more short one, Greg says, get over civility. Our elections have always been rough. That's life. Get out and fight. How do those sound up against what you found, Joe?
Well, I think that they are, you know, that's the discourse that we always hear. Those are the voices that we usually hear on talk radio. You know, those are the voices that, you know, you see in the sound bites on broadcast news. And there's a certain amount of validity to what they said.
Casey's not exaggerating. You get down in the details of immigration or gay marriage, and it can get rough.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, when you get down to the details of immigration with most Americans, they take a very moderate position. They're in favor of immigration. They're opposed to illegal immigration. You know, you talk about the 11 million people who are already here. They figure that you have to find a way to, you know, a pathway for them to citizenship. With abortion, it's the same thing. Most people are in favor of abortion in the, you know, first couple of months of a pregnancy and tend to be more against it as you go deeper in. But there is a small group on, you know, on both sides, you know, the always abortion or never abortion group, and those are the people who dominate the public conversation. I could go down every issue on this list and find the same thing. Now, it is also true that the centrist half, you know, half a loaf solution isn't always the best solution. I think that with a lot of our economic problems, as I said, I think that there needed to be a much more dramatic and you know, and dynamic response to the crash in 2007 and 2008 and what it told us about the lack of regulation on Wall Street. I think most people would agree with that.
If they had someone to speak for that. It just brings me back to why you say the base keeps that from happening. But can the base be that powerful if the majority that you're describing, 89%, is so big?
Yeah, well, they can be powerful if they're providing all the money. I think that, and if they're providing all the phone calls that come in, you know, to congressional offices or to, you know, talk radio. And I don't, by talk radio, I don't mean reasonable talk like, you know, like this program. I mean the kind of screeching that you hear on the AM dial as you drive around the country.
No, there sure is a lot of it. Nancy in Atlanta, Georgia. Nancy, great to have you. Thanks for calling. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I found it really interesting to listen to what Middle America is speaking about, because I consider myself part of that. My question for Joe, because he commented that one of the folks he spoke with had said that, you know, we elect the officials to Washington, but when they get there, they're not addressing the issues. What is your opinion on term limits, and do you feel that if term limits could be passed, would our representatives be more responsive to the people that elected them and less responsive to lobbyists and political action committees?
What do you say, Joe? Nancy wants to fix the problem if we've got one here.
Well, I'm against term limits. I'm in favor of aggressive activist citizenship. I mean, there are certain politicians that I've met over the years who warranted more than a couple of terms, who built up a lot of expertise that, you know, and represented a reasonable voice and had an institutional memory, especially in areas like foreign policy and the more arcane areas of domestic policy. One of my great mentors was Daniel Patrick Moynihan. I would have given him lifetime status in the Senate. And the interesting thing about Moynihan is that he was fairly unpredictable ideologically.
But if your answer to, you know, Nancy's listening closely, she says, well, how do we get this reasonable view that you find out in the country empowered? You say, well, it's aggressive activist citizenship. But you say that, and right away, Nancy might well think of Tea Party or Occupy Wall Street. The things you're saying may not be as representative.
Well, I think that the people in the middle have to be every bit as activist and aggressive as the people on the wings. Historically, that has never been the case. But also, historically, our country has been at strongest when we had the larger the middle class, the stronger the country, the larger the amount of consensus, the stronger the country. And so, you know, I'm not asking, I'm asking for something that is unusual, but it is probably something that we really need, which is for the people in the middle who feel disenfranchised to be as as active and maybe even noisy as the people on the wings.
Occupy Wall Street had not really geared up while you were on the road. Do you have any sense of how that was playing? I mean, you know, you can see reports that say that it's got widespread sympathy in this country, but I don't know. What do you think?
Well, you know, in our polling, it had much greater sympathy than the Tea Party does. Although it's really interesting, during the road trip, the people who most expressed the kind of attitudes that Occupy Wall Street have expressed were the Tea Party members who were against the Wall Street bailouts. Who one woman at the Tea Party meeting I went to in Texarkana was railing against Big Pharma and the efforts to she believed to have a whole new generation of American children addicted to Ritalin. Ritalin isn't addictive, but
her sense of it
saying,
there. So is there a real overlap there or not? When we've played around
with
this
idea, there's
populist,
but I think that there is populist overlap. And there is a sense that big America, big government, big business, big labor, big media, are running the show is what led to the aggrievement, that caused the Tea Party and also is leading to a certain extent to the aggrievement that's causing Occupy Wall Street.
Columbia, South Carolina. Chip's calling. Hi, Chip. You're on with Joe Klein.
Hi, Tom and Mr. Joe Klein.
Hi.
Yes, Occupy Columbia. I agree totally because a lot of times, it's the, I guess the empty wagon makes all that noise and everything. So I guess you make a lot of noise, you attract the attention of the media, and you get your ideas out. But Occupy Columbia in here, as I was telling a lot of people all throughout the country, is a peaceable rally. We're here to show people that we are mad at the bank, the bailout of the bankers. We're mad at the corporate greed going on and everything. But we don't think we have to be arrested. Mind you, we're not knocking anybody, that's getting arrested because it's civil disobedience is as easy as somebody, the police come and tell you, move along, sir, and you decide not to, you're going to get arrested. Well, we're not knocking at. We are, kind of knocking against people that are out there just starting skirmishes and just, messing with people and everything.
But Chip,
like that,
let me ask you, so you're not on Wall Street, but you're occupying Columbia. Would you describe yourself as one of the middle-of-the-road Americans that Joe Klein is finding and kind of celebrating in his article, or are you on a wing? How would you see yourself, Chip?
Well, I'm independent, and you had a caller on there that was talking about the voting, what I was in the past and all that, but I'm independent. I voted, Democrat, and I voted Republican, but I'm independent because I really don't like people, asking me, well, declare your party, Democrat or Republican, and we made such a furor, there was such an uproar about that, that they actually had to go back in the election commission and say that independents don't have to come out there, don't question whether they're for Republican or Democrats, and they said okay because we weren't going to vote, and that would have just really threw the kibosh into everything.
There's Chip, independent in Columbia, and thank you, Chip. Let me get one more here. San Francisco, California. Dean is calling. Hi, Dean. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that has me concerned is that it seems like there's a rise in activism, but it's activism where opinion sort of trumps knowledge or facts. The thing that made me call in was the caller talking about voting for his Republican mayor, and it's hard when there's a single-issue litmus test.
Yeah.
I agree that single-issue litmus tests are bad, but he called out belief in evolution. You know, when the issue is I believe in scientific evidence or I don't believe in scientific evidence, it's hard for me to wrap my head around. I was trained initially in the physical sciences, and when somebody says, I don't believe in climate change or I don't believe in evolution, that's almost as shocking to me as somebody who says, I think the sun revolves around the earth.
Yeah, Dean, let's put it right to Joe. Joe, what did you find? A lot of our debates sort of glide off into this storm of emotion. What about Americans wanting sort of facts underneath what they're talking about?
Yeah, well, I think most people do, and I think that those who don't, I mean, there's 30 to 40% of the American people who believe in Martians. I mean, you can always find a minority of the public who believe in certain things or don't believe in, in pretty well-established scientific fact, like climate change and, the sheer reality of evolution. But to me, the interesting thing is that on some of the biggest issues, we're having no debate at all on the political level, but a lot of debate, down on the local issues level,
like,
for example.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For example, I mean, you know, when you talk to people about what's happened to our economy, mm-hmm. They know viscerally that something has gone wrong with the financial services sector. You know, I can mm-hmm. give you the facts that it went from 7% to 27% of American GDP over mm-hmm. the last 30 years.
Yep.
And people sense that those that the financial services sector had a lot to do with closing down factories, sending jobs overseas. But if you look at the coming presidential campaign, you're going to have Barack Obama, who chose not to shake up Wall Street mm-hmm. By appointing someone like Paul Volcker as his Treasury Secretary. Mm-hmm. He went with Tim Geithner, a Wall Street guy. And, you know, the leading Republican right now is Mitt Romney. And I don't think there's, much difference between the two of them on restructuring the financial services sector, which is something that you hear all the time from middle Americans.
They're thinking about it, and they know, in their gut, too, where the action might need to be. Dean, I appreciate your call. Josh in Cheshire, Connecticut. Josh, you're on the air with Joe Klein.
Yeah, I'm curious as to what you make of Bill Bishop's book, The Big Sort, and the clustering of America, as he puts it. And in particular, the research that he highlights showing that while people say they're interested in compromise, that in fact, when it comes down to it, they're really not that interested in compromise.
They don't even live with people who disagree with them, he found in his research. It seems like it might contradict what Joe's got to say. We'll ask him. Joe, what do you say? You know Bill Bishop's research there?
No, I'm not familiar with it.
The clustering of America, how like-minded people tend to move into towns and subdivisions and gated communities together, et cetera.
I think that there's a fair amount of truth to that, but the like-mindedness in many cases is a form of moderation. In many of these meetings that were put together for me by Time Magazine readers, mm-hmm. You had people who, disagreed politically. They were Democrats and Republicans, and yet they agreed that a compromise could be reached on big issues like the federal deficit. And so, the desire to compromise is also a form of like-mindedness, even if they disagree on specific issues.
Let's get one more call. Jessica in Lexington, Kentucky. You're on with Joe. Thanks, Jessica.
Thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I love your show.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to say I'm a working mom. I've got two small children, and I would love to be more active, but I just don't have a lot of free time. Can you give some suggestions on, things that I could do that are going to be heard or make a difference?
We got it. Joe, there's your silent majority speaking up. You got a question.
Well, it's really hard because people are working very hard these days, especially those who are in the drop-dead center of the middle class. Mom and dad are both working jobs and sometimes more than one job, and it's hard. And I think that the most basic piece of advice that I would give is don't get all of your news from one source, just for starters.
Mm-hmm.
Sample a range of opinions. Don't just go to Fox News or to MSNBC. Really try and discern the range of reasonable opinion on an issue and then make up your mind if you don't have the time to go out and be active. But try and be well-informed. And I think that there are far too many people in this country who are not well-informed at all at this point.
Jessica, good luck with that, and we hope we can help right here. One of the songs on your playlist was Bruce Springsteen called Saving Up, and he's got this lyric, he's saving up for something money can't buy. There is a sense that you convey here, Joe, of Americans also kind of spiritually girding themselves here, not just to become consumers again, but something else maybe. What was that about?
Well, the song is saving up for the things that money can't buy. And, in this kind of introspective, contemplative, mood that I found out there, you find people like an orthodontist from Little Rock who said, I'd be a happy camper in a house half the size that I have now. I didn't have to drive here in a BMW today. I could have driven here in something more modest. Maybe we're placing too much emphasis on material goods. And then I went to Joplin, Missouri, which was the emotional heart of this trip, where I talked to
the tornado hit and just wiped this town out. Big
it wiped
it.
Out most of the material goods, yeah. many material goods. I mean, you know, it was an astonishing sight, that storm. Mm-hmm. It's still, the, you know, a wiped out area. And in its wake, you find an awful lot of people in that town banding together, helping their neighbors, working for the future of the town. And that's kind of a metaphor for where we are in America right now. You know, we've been skating along for the last 30 years on this tide of prosperity, and it may be now time to suck it up and work for each other and work for the spiritual things, get our satisfaction from things other than material goods. I found that kind of inspirational and lovely.
Joe Klein, we're always glad when you hit the road, and we're grateful to you for bringing your report to us right here today. Thanks so much for joining us, Joe.
Oh, thanks, Tom, for giving this issue this time.
Good luck to your mom. Hope she does just as well as she can. Joe Klein's big cover story is the return of the silent majority. You can see video from his road trip at our website, onpointradio.org. Here's Clarence Clemons with the original Savin' Up. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.